The zombie war came unthinkably close to eradicating humanity. Driven by the need to preserve the first-hand experiences from those apocalyptic years, while they still exist in living memory, Max Brooks traveled across the planet to find and record the testimony of men, women, and sometimes children who came face to face with the living, or at least the undead, hell of that terrible time. World War Z is the result. Some of these voices were chosen for the uniqueness of the perspectives and information they provide. Others are included because they speak for hundreds of millions who were forever silenced. Never before have we had access to a recording that so powerfully conveys the fear and horror, and also the brave spirit of resistance, that gripped human society through the plague years.
Random House Audio presents World War Z.
Sand Lakes Provincial Wilderness Park, Manitoba, Canada. Jessica Hendricks gestures to the expanse of subarctic wasteland. The natural beauty has been replaced with wreckage, abandoned vehicles, debris, and human corpses partially frozen into the gray snow and ice. Originally from Waukesha, Wisconsin, the now naturalized Canadian is part of the region's Wilderness Restoration Project. Along with several hundred other volunteers, she has come here every summer since the end of official hostilities. Although WRP claims to have made substantial progress, none can claim to see any end in sight.
I don't blame them, the government, the people who are supposed to protect us. Objectively, I guess I can understand. They couldn't have everyone following the Army West behind the Rocky Mountains. How are they going to feed all of us? How are they going to screen us? And how could they ever hope to stop the armies of undead that almost certainly would have been following us? I can understand why they would want to divert as many refugees north as possible. What else could they do? Stop us at the Rockies with armed troops? Gas us like the Ukrainians? At least if we went north, we might have a chance. Once the temperature dropped and the undead froze, some of us might be able to survive. That was happening all around the rest of the world, people fleeing north, hoping to stay alive until winter came. No, I don't blame them for wanting to divert us. I can forgive that. But the irresponsible way they did it, the lack of vital information that would have helped so many to stay alive, that I can never forgive. It was August, 2 weeks after Yonkers and just 3 days after the government had started withdrawing west. We hadn't had too many outbreaks in our neighborhood. I'd only seen one, a collection of six of them feeding on a homeless man. The cops had put them down quickly. It happened 3 blocks from our house, and that was when my father decided to leave. We were in the living room. My father was learning how to load his new rifle while Mom finished nailing up the windows. You couldn't find a channel with anything but zombie news, either live images or recorded footage from Yonkers. Looking back, I still can't believe how unprofessional the news media was. So much spin, so few hard facts. All those digestible sound bites from an army of experts, all contradicting one another, all trying to seem more shocking and in-depth than the last one. It was so confusing, nobody seemed to know what to do. The only thing any of them could agree on was that all private citizens should go north, because the living dead freeze solid, extreme cold was our only hope. That's all we heard. No more instructions on where to head north, what to bring with us, how to survive. Just that damn catchphrase you'd hear from every talking head or just crawling over and over across the bottom of the TV. Go north, go north, go north. That's it, Dad said. We're getting out of here tonight and heading north. He tried to sound determined, slapping his rifle. He'd never touched a gun in his life. He was a gentleman in the most literal sense. He was a gentle man. Short, bald, a pudgy face that turned red when he laughed. He was the king of the bad jokes and cheesy one-liners. He always had something for you, a compliment or a smile, or a little extension to my allowance that Mom wasn't supposed to know about. He was the good cop in the family. He left all the big decisions up to Mom. Mom tried to argue, tried to make him see reason. We lived above the snow line. We had all we needed. Why trek into the unknown when we could just stock up on supplies, continue to fortify the house, and just wait until the first fall frost? Dad wouldn't hear it. We could all be dead by the fall. We could be dead by next week. He was so caught up in the great panic. He told us it would be like an extended camping trip. We'd live on moose burgers and wild berry desserts. He promised to teach me how to fish and asked me what I wanted to name my pet rabbit when I caught it. He'd lived in Waukesha his whole life. He'd never been camping.
She shows me something in the ice. It's a collection of cracked DVDs.
This is what people brought with them. Hair dryers, game cubes, laptops by the dozen. I don't think they were stupid enough to think they could really use them. Maybe some did. I think most people were just afraid of losing them, that they'd come home after 6 months and find their homes looted. We actually thought we were packing sensibly. Warm clothes, cooking utensils, things from the medicine cabinet, and all the canned food we could carry. It looked like enough food for a couple of years. We finished half of it on the way up. That didn't bother me. It was like an adventure, the trek north. All those stories you hear about the clogged roads and violence, that wasn't us. We were in the first wave. The only people ahead of us were the Canadians, and most of them were already long gone. There was still a lot of traffic on the road, more cars than I'd ever seen, but it all moved pretty quickly and only really snarled in places like roadside towns or parks.
Parks?
Parks, designated campgrounds, any place where people thought they'd gone far enough. Dad used to look down on those people, calling them short-sighted and irrational. He said that we were still way too close to population centers, and the only way to really make it was to head as far north as we could. Mom would always argue that it wasn't their fault, that most of them had simply run out of gas. And whose fault is that, Dad would say. We had a lot of spare gas cans on the roof of the minivan. Dad had been stocking up since the first days of the panic. We passed a lot of traffic snarls around roadside gas stations, most of which already had these giant signs outside that said, "No more gas." Dad drove by them really fast. He drove fast by a lot of things. The stalled cars that needed a jump, or hitchhikers who needed a ride. There were a lot of those in some cases, walking in lines by the side of the road, looking the way you think refugees are supposed to look. Every now and then a car would stop to pick up a couple and suddenly everyone wanted a ride. See what they got themselves into? That was Dad.